Community Conversations with Community Centres SA. Here's Kerry Ackermans.
The Australian Neighbourhood Houses and Centres Association, ANCHA, is the national peak body for neighbourhood houses and centres in Australia. CCSA is a member as a peak body of that national organisation, and ANCHA itself is a member of the International Federation of Neighbourhood Houses and Community Centres. Today we'll be talking to Tomas Basegiev, who is actually with the Caloundra Community Centre as their manager, to talk from a national perspective, and then to Paul Sefke, who is a public innovator who's worked for years in the community sector, to talk about the international perspective. Welcome to the podcast, Tomas, the Good Times Supervisor of Caloundra Community Centre Incorporated. I just love that.
Hey, Gary, thank you for having me.
Tomas, now we're going to be talking about ANCHA, which is a bit of a mouthful, the Australian Neighbourhood Houses and Centres Association, ANCHA. It's the national peak body. And what we want to know specifically from you is how you became involved and what it's meant for your state to be involved with community centres. So tell us about your background, how you got involved.
Well, I'm actually the manager of the Caloundra Community Centre, despite my funny title.
Oh, I love the Good Times.
A couple of months. Yeah, I know. But I manage the Caloundra Community Centre, but I've been involved with the Neighbourhood Centre in different roles for over 15 years now. And so our peak body in Queensland for neighbourhood centres is Neighbourhood Centres Queensland. And then Neighbourhood Centres Queensland, as the Queensland peak, is part of ANCHA in the sort of national space. So I became involved with Neighbourhood Centres Queensland as a board member around about 2015, 2016. And then I was, for a period of time, chair of Neighbourhood Centres Queensland. And the way that we kind of work that model for ANCHA is that two representatives from each state form the committee or the board of ANCHA. Is that complex enough?
Yes, no, Tomas, that's great, just so people understand that. And Tomas, what would you say if you asked, what's the real purpose of ANCHA? What are they trying to do?
ANCHA was really that contribute to like the national policy and issues of common interest to neighbourhood houses across Australia. Obviously, you know, neighbourhood houses, neighbourhood centres, community centres, whatever we call them, you know, they're hyper-localised and community-focused, and sometimes it's very easy to feel quite like a small pinpoint organisation dealing with these large social issues, and that's where those big bodies can really help to bring issues together and push policy forward. So the purpose of ANCHA was really to have that voice at the federal level and to kind of have a sense of collegiality and collaboration across states on issues that generally are national. And the challenge, I suppose, is also that most of neighbourhood centres, neighbourhood houses, we generally funded or most of our support comes from state government. So our big bodies at the state level are extremely important, but we also felt like there needed to be a national conversation happening, and that's the space that sort of ANCHA plays.
And of course, interestingly, in Australia, Tomas, is that we're not always very good at collaborating, particularly when it comes to the states and territories. Everyone thinks that the way that they do it is the best way. What's it like trying to bring everybody together under one umbrella to get that consistency and collaboration?
The tyranny of distance is always very challenging, and even with the amazing modern tools that we have in terms of video meetings and all of those things, it's still so important to come face-to-face, but of course coming face-to-face becomes increasingly difficult when we are so separated from each other and the cost of getting together is expensive. So, and yes, as you say, we're all funded differently under different arrangements. Different state governments have different understandings and support for neighbourhood centres. So some are very strong, some not so much. And also there's wave of support or flavour of the month. Yeah, so I think even sometimes it's not like we're doing an awful lot together nationally, but it's just having that conversation and those lines of communications open are really important. And look, for us, in terms of when I was in my role with Neighbourhood Centres Queensland, there were so many resources and tools and support that I was able to get from my colleagues at the national level, whether it was their expertise or experience, whether it was that they had already done a piece of work that I could replicate or mirror. That's always really important. So again, it's that collegiality and that collaboration when we are not competing for funding with each other. It's really important. And as you know, the whole human services sector is being almost set up to compete, which it's never a good outcome for the people we work with when we are competing with each other. Mm. So that federated model kind of works in that sense that we can work together, we can share resources and not feel like we have to watch each other's back.
And Thomas, I'm also on that board as a representative of the Community Centres SA, and one of the projects that I think have been very successful is the assistance with getting charitable status for many of the not-for-profits who work under community centres and neighbourhood houses.
Yeah, so ANCA was established, or is established, to have a public fund for DGI. So a lot of organisations that are not eligible to get that, then they can do it through the vehicle of ANCA. So they can either receive donations, for example, or apply for funding when funding bodies require you to have DG deductible gift recipient status. And they can do that through any neighbourhood centre that is a member of the state PIC body can do that under the umbrella of ANCA.
I'm talking to Thomas Paseggi. He's the manager of the Caloundra Community Centre. Thomas, you've been in the sector for a long time. What do you see as the greatest challenges, just whether it be from your state or across the board currently, for community centres and neighbourhood houses?
A couple of things that come to mind. The changing nature of volunteers, volunteerism and professionalism are kind of challenges, sometimes both good and bad. I think a lot of organisations, I hear them saying they're finding it more and more difficult to find volunteers. But at the same time, we know that our industry has professionalised immensely in the last, let's say, 20 years. That's been good and bad, good for many reasons, but also because, yeah, the complexity of the issues we're dealing with make it less appealing or appropriate for volunteers to then be involved or manage some, you know, the people that are presenting, the complex issues that people present with. So that's kind of always been a challenge, how we manage and work with volunteers. I think the more we professionalise, then that's a really good thing. But then also we kind of move away from working with people as people. Like, it becomes more of a sort of worker, you know, it's more of that kind of client relationship, or, you know, the mental health, they call it consumer. We move away from that sense that neighbourhood centres, community centres were by the people, for the people, with the people. So I find kind of that challenging. And there's also this pressure of, again, like, funding is tight, moving away from our core values or core work, which is that neighbourhood centre work, or being generalist rather than specialist or in something in particular, and just working with people where they're at and just providing a platform for local people to come up with solutions and resources rather than just, all right, here's a problem, let's apply for funding and then we'll be able to sort of address that or solve that. You know, the neighbourhood centre spirit, it's always been that we're working with local people together in local responses to local issues. And, yeah, I see that pull more at organisations sort of becoming more kind of professionalising, corporatising, and then so they become, there's a different kind of pull to something that then keeps people away from engaging at a human level. They're just engaging as a client of a service.
That's really good points, because that's not where community centres and neighbourhood centres started from. They're very much, as you said, Thomas, place-based solutions. The great thing about ANCA is it can help leverage the intellectual property of the sector, but still retain that place-based focus.
Yeah, it's a thing of local resources, local knowledge, local relationships, and that's where we should play value. And again, that role of community development, neighbourhood centres have always been hand-in-hand with community development. And as we know, or anybody that does community development, it takes time and it's a long journey and it's hard to quantify, you know, and there are ways to measure and evaluate it, but are not your stock standard 3-monthly reporting of how many people, or do you know what I mean? So then that's what becomes difficult. And I think then it's up to all of us in the sector to kind of keep pushing back on having to, again, that our reports or the way we measure our value gets like reduced too much to how it suits other type of service providers.
And of course that value is hard to measure, but oh so important if you took it away.
Oh, absolutely. And no one's saying that we shouldn't, again, evaluate our programs or reflect on our practice. I mean, at the end of the day, most of us are using public money and everyone wants to know that public money and public funds are used appropriately, and there's accountability and transparency. It's just that the community development model doesn't kind of quite fit neatly with someone that might be just measuring how many families you saw in a week or how many people have gone through a program or how many people attend an event. All those things are kind of fairly easy to manage, but it's more difficult to manage someone that perhaps came to a neighborhood center looking for a food voucher or a community meal and then somehow transitioning to being a group member, later transitioning to a volunteer role, and years down the track, might be sitting on the board of that organization. I mean, that's huge. That's
and that has
change.
Happened.
And that I know you and I would have so many examples of those things happening, but it's very hard to kind of quantify and qualify that, again, that sort of like quarterly reporting or three-year cycle of a funding program.
Exactly right. So, Thomas, from your perspective, what would you like to see happen if you had the wand for community development?
Look, I think, again, a lot of state and federal agencies lean on neighborhood centers, but because they are locality-based and very small, tend to not then get involved in the funding side of it or in the supporting side of it. You know this, Kerry, but I use it all the time here in Queensland. There's more neighborhood centers in Australia than there are McDonald's restaurants. So there's this huge network, there's this huge web of centers interconnected to their own communities. But we're all different. We have different governance. We have our own style of doing things, our own way. So, you know, I think what I like to do is that strengthening of the sector, but without losing that approach. Like, the last thing I would like to see is that there's one provider or one agency managing 5, 6, 10, 12 neighborhood centers in one state just because it's convenient or because it's neater or because it suits a particular funding model. The magic wand would be that understanding of the neighborhood center work, of the community development work, and then that resources are allocated appropriately with again. I'll give you an example. Like, we have agencies that use neighborhood centers during natural disasters. You know, they come and they go, and they use the center to provide some of the crisis response. The same for families that need supported or supervised visits by the Department of Child Safety. So, you know, you have all these bigger agencies using the centers. There's this conversation about social prescribing. So, again, you have this great model. Like, the social prescribing model is very interesting, but it can also become cost-shifting from a federally and state-funded health service to a local teen-port organization that is just struggling to survive. So I think it's more than understanding of the value of neighborhood centers. The money and the kind of funding can come later, but I think it's that genuine understanding of the value that our local neighborhood center plays to that community.
And of course, Thomas, that's what Anchor can do, is to offer that aggregate advocacy. Thomas, really appreciate you speaking to us today. You've certainly been a great contributor. It was really good to be able to tease out what Anchor does. Appreciate you spending that time on the podcast with us today.
Thank you, Gary. It's been great.
Just been joined by Paul Sefke. Now, Paul calls himself a public innovator because he's worked in that space. He's actually retired, but still very active, helping community centres and neighbourhood houses do what they do so well. Welcome to the podcast, Paul.
Thanks, Kerry. Good to be here.
Now, Paul, you're actually on the Anchor board, but greater than that, you actually reach out internationally. You're on the international board. Tell us about that.
Right. Well, the International Federation of Settlements and Neighbourhood Centres, Settlements, Neighbourhood Centres is interchangeable internationally, is an almost 100-year-old organisation that covers 35 different countries and maybe about 12,000 neighbourhood houses, settlements, houses, neighbourhood centres, whatever you want to call them in the context, across the globe. I've been on that board since 2019, and I represent a state-based organisation, LCSA, in New South Wales on that board.
And you, of course, have done a lot of work with community centres and neighbourhood centres within your own state of New South Wales. Just talk to us about that work.
Okay, well, I have been in the community sector for the better part of my working life. I started as a youth worker in 1979 in North Queensland, of all places. But in 2008, I got the job as the manager of the Nambucca Valley Neighbourhood Centre, which is just a valley shire just south of Coffs Harbour, and connected through the state peak body for neighbourhood centres in New South Wales called LCSA, the Local Community Services Association, which has currently about 190-odd members across New South Wales, so very much like Community Centres SA or Neighbourhood Houses Vic or Tasmania, Queensland, across the country. We're one of those state peak bodies. I got on the board of that. I was asked to join the board about 2012, something like that, 2013, and have been on the board ever since at a state level. I found out I was not going to be working anymore towards the end of 2019 and joined the board of Coffs Harbour Neighbourhood Centre, which is a much bigger regional centre. So I do the quadrilla. I'm on a local neighbourhood centre board in Coffs Harbour, on the state board, on the national anchor board, and now I'm vice president internationally. So retired is a euphemistic word. I'm very busy doing all those things.
People are often busier in retirement, Paul. Now, Paul, from an international perspective, where do you see community at?
Ah, that's a good question. Well, I suppose from the perspective of the work we do in communities, you've got to talk about the importance of local engagement. We're part of a movement. You know, neighbourhood houses, neighbourhood centres, settlements are part of a movement internationally. I see that at a state level and at a national level. And we have, I think, a fairly common set of values. You could be more broad and talk about that in terms of human rights, more particularly social justice, inclusion. But in a lot of ways, I think it's about helping communities, and this is the same across the globe, being more engaged. So individuals being more engaged with each other, working together to solve local problems, often doing the things at that local and community level that governments aren't able or willing to do. So making it better in your local community, solving those human issues, you know, a whole range of those issues. Kerry, like, where do you start?
I know, it's so big, isn't it? And that is the issue, if you like. But one thing about having the anchor, the national board, and of course you're on the international board, is you're able to aggregate the voices to advocate for those important issues.
Look, I think if you look at the response, you know, and LCSA was very much caught up in the response to COVID at an international level. We planned to have the international IFS conference in Sydney in 2020, but we couldn't because we couldn't get people to come to Sydney in 2020. So that impacted on the ability of the ongoing every 2 year conference and board general assembly process in IFS, to the point where we had to help as the potential hosts find a way to deal with that. And what I think we did was pretty important, because we proved that you could run a conference virtually. It's a hell of a lot of work, you know, 40 online sessions over 4 days. No one got any sleep, and, you know, given international time zones. But that, at that time, talked about things like food security, which was happening everywhere in COVID. It talked about isolation, which was happening everywhere in COVID. It talked about the most vulnerable people being impacted, and that was the same in Italy, that was the same in Scandinavia, that was the same in the US, and of course in Australia, that we shared that story amongst our state federations, Kerry. So there's a similarity that is somewhat uncanny, but it's also uplifting, that here we are working for broadly social justice, broadly the idea of local democracy, not the institutional democracy where you vote every 4 years and have governments and national and state institutions, but that sort of democratic way of seeing how you live together as humans in your community. And I think that resonates as part of, as we have called it in New South Wales, as I'm sure we've alluded to it nationally, as part of a movement, which means that we can talk about how we do that across the globe and share ideas, initiatives, and hopefully motivation to continue to do that and grow that.
So, of course, Paul, if I'm a community centre or a neighbourhood centre in Australia, if I'm a member of the peak body, that, of course, then gives the opportunity to have that national voice. And indeed, then nationally, we're a member of the International Federation, that huge organisation where, as you said, we can share and collaborate ideas. What would be your vision? What would you like to see?
Wow, that's a very good question. I suppose, fundamentally, it's a bit about understanding that we are on a very, very closed system called planet Earth. There are things that impact on us, and the way we addressed that at our conference in 2021 was to put the concepts of social justice and democracy in some sort of framework that related to the United Nations. IFS has the highest NGO status at the UN, so we're a super NGO. So when the NGO has committees, like committees on disability, ageing, young people, ECOSOC, the economic and social agency of the UN, often engages with our colleagues in New York and more latterly in Geneva around some of that committee work. What do local community centres think? Is there a view that can be shared globally? But I suppose the broader context is something that I think people in Australia don't know a lot about. I think people in neighbourhood houses may do, because they practice it every day, is the Sustainable Development Goals of the UN. these resonate with our work in an Australian context. You know, there's 17 of them, and I won't run through them. That'd be a bit over the top. But if you think about some of the high points, end poverty, talk about zero hunger, food security would come into that, health and well-being, gender equality, inclusion, reduced inequalities. That speaks to some of the work around including marginalised members of communities, be they refugees, be they First Nations people. Even we've talked about and alluded to, you know, Kerry, at a national level, the work that we do in trying to educate people around climate change and some of the initiatives that can happen locally. So there's 17 SDGs.
Massive and, agenda.
But we are doing our little bit at a local level by engaging our local people, be they marginalised, be they socially isolated, be they needing a little bit of help, and trying to facilitate some sort of action collectively at a local level that helps people make it better together. That resonates for me. So my vision is that that message is that regardless of what all these funny people do at, you know, international conferences like NATO or whatever, the Warsaw Pact or whatever all of those things are in history, at a local level, people still need to be civil to each other. They need to engage with each other, and they need to understand that we are a social animal that live in communities.
Absolutely. Paul, nicely put. Thank you for joining us on the podcast today. We really appreciate you giving your personal and also that international perspective on community centres and neighbourhood houses.
Thank you very much for the interest. Let's hope the movement continues to flourish.
Absolutely. Thank you. And thank you for listening and engaging with our community conversations today. Every week, we aim to bring you stories from far and wide across South Australia and beyond. People who are game changers in our community, doing great work, plus general topics of community interest. If you have any subjects you think we should cover or any other feedback, please let us know at communitycentressa.asn.au and feel free to share this podcast so we can engage more people in our next community conversation.
Community Conversations. For more information, check out communitycentressa.asn.au.